Attending a toy show is a lot of fun, but having access to the show before the doors open to the general public can make the event even more special. Purchasing an early bird ticket and getting in an hour in advance provides a different experience altogether. The show in the early morning is calmer as vendors finalize the displays on their tables. It's the midpoint between the frenzy of setup and the rush of the larger crowd in the hours to follow. Many of the people amble about sleepily, while some seem to have been awake for hours. But the atmosphere is always a hopeful one. In that first hour, the smaller early bird crowd equates to wider and open aisles to wander. It doesn't feel as claustrophobic. It's quieter. It's peaceful. You can take your time looking through the wares scattered on and around each table. There's less competition and more space to hunt for the toys and relics you desire. Getting to the tables early means you have a better chance of landing a rare piece before anyone else snatches it. You can choose your own path to take within the venue, and you can move at a pace that works best for you, instead of following the flow of the crowd and fighting through the bottlenecks that form as people stop to peruse the tables and the lanes begin to narrow. Some of my favorite memories from the shows are walking with a friend during those early bird hours. We don't have to shout over the roar of excited shoppers. It's more personal, more relaxed in a sense. We're able to help one another find items for our respective collections while experiencing the show together. When I get there early, I'm able to do multiple laps and survey the entirety of the show. I have a chance to purchase items before they disappear. And I can also make deals with the vendors, speaking with them one-on-one before they're pulled in many directions once the general public walks through the doors. For a moment, in those early hours, the show feels like it's mine to traverse. By the time the larger crowds arrive, I've made my finds, purchased any items I need for my collection, and have toured the building from one end to the other. And when it comes to collecting, going where the spotlight isn't is similar to shopping before a toy show opens. As the collecting spaces become busier with activity, there's something to be said for stepping away from the heavily trafficked areas and seeking newer and lesser traveled paths. Going where the spotlight isn't often offers a wider availability of items at more reasonable prices. And you have the chance to tour that area of the collecting world before other Star Wars fans in the community catch on and meet you there. Today, I'd like to share my personal experience collecting Star Wars memorabilia with you, and how it helped me to acquire items when they were cheaper and more available. This is a lesson I learned early in my collecting journey, and it proved to be a valuable and significant one in shaping my collecting story. This is an opportunity for all of us to build and to broaden our respective collections over time by venturing where the spotlight isn't. And this is Star Wars Prototypes and Production. I love to go where the spotlight isn't. As collectors, that may not be a natural instinct. And I think for me, this pursuit of new and unexplored areas comes from a curiosity to explore. It also stems from a tough lesson I learned as a vintage Star Wars collector. When I first started down the path as a serious collector in 2011, my focus began, like many of our peers, with the loose Kenner action figures. Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Power of the Force, and eventually the Droids and Ewoks animated lines. If it was released by Kenner between 1977 and 1985, I wanted to own it. I realized rather quickly that I preferred to have the figures still sealed on their original card backs, and in the best condition possible, as if they were pulled off the shelves the day that I purchased them. That was merely my preference, and how I collected. That standard has remained to this day. But my focus was on the loose and carded production examples. As I learned more about the history of the Kenner line, however, I developed an appreciation and a love for the prototypes and pre-production examples that had survived. These early pieces were the ones that shaped and defined the toys I loved as a child. They were incredibly special, and I had hoped to own some of them. Unfortunately, they were extremely difficult to locate. And in the rare instance in which one would pop up on eBay, it was expensive. And to be honest with you, I didn't yet understand the process of how a toy was made or the full significance of each prototype's role. Over time, the process became clearer to me. I learned what a wax sculpt was, how a hard copy was made, and how it was used to create the molds to produce the first plastic versions of a figure. I obsessively read every article and online entry I could find about the subject. But I didn't know any prototype collectors at the time. Back then, many of the knowledgeable collectors I'm now blessed to call friends today were simply names in a byline or a blog entry. But listening to the Kivecast, the Star Wars Collectors Archive podcast, in the early 2010s helped, as collectors who shared the same passion for prototypes discussed the items around a specific character at length. During those formative years, it felt like I was attending a series of exciting classes at a university. And if I was majoring in vintage Star Wars collectibles, I was minoring in prototypes. And I was comfortable with learning as much as I could before acquiring any pieces. Because I wanted to understand what I was buying as well as the significance and value of each item. And I wanted to be informed enough to avoid fakes or reproductions. I had made it my goal to pick up at least one vintage Kenner pre-production Star Wars item each year, and I wasn't expecting to add larger ticketed ones like hard copies or complete first shots. I was fine with landing a head-pull torso test piece of an Admiral Ackbar for $315, or a Forlom example for less than $200. These were the types of galactic artifacts I admired, and they were the ones I could afford. I joined Facebook in 2016, becoming a member of many of the active Star Wars collecting groups at that time. And as our circle of collector friends grew, the prototype discussions expanded. Our peers showcased their recent notable pickups online, and they shared images of their incredible runs related to the action figures, the proof cards, and the Power of the Force coins. And in the years between 2014 and 2017, most of the prices for the handfuls of pre-production material that surfaced for sale went way beyond my spending abilities. In 2017, I attended the Star Wars Celebration Convention in Orlando, Florida. While there, I met a notable collector who had guested on the Kivecast podcast numerous times. He was promoting a book he wrote about Star Wars pre-production items. The collector and I shared an interest in collecting around one of the characters, and I asked him if he had any advice for me as I pursued vintage prototypes. He thought about the question for a moment and admitted to me, "It's tough. If I were starting now, I wouldn't have what I currently own. I'd never be able to afford them." His honesty put my mind at ease. And his candor made me realize I didn't need to try to compete at that level to acquire the type of collection many of these established collectors owned. I simply couldn't. It wasn't that I was missing the right connections or lacked the proper information to do so. It was that the era in which these items were available had passed. There was a time in which vintage prototypes were overlooked by most collectors. They were easily obtainable through ads in Toy Shop in the 1990s, in the forums and on eBay, and there was even a store in Ohio that sold them. And some may have considered them to be expensive then, but they were a fraction of today's values. There was a healthy spectrum of prices, and with the quantity that had surfaced, it was possible to put together runs of a particular character or era. And by the time I grabbed my adventurer's hat and strapped up my boots to explore that world, that era of plentiful and relatively inexpensive was over. It didn't mean I couldn't collect vintage prototypes. I would still hunt for them on a daily basis. But I had to accept the fact that as I walked that terrain, most of the fertile soil had dried out years earlier, and the plants that once produced fruit were gone. Running parallel to vintage collecting was a new path, however. The year before I attended Celebration Orlando, I watched the Clone Wars animated series for the first time. It resonated with me in a very unexpected way. I saw the richness and creativity in what George Lucas and Dave Filoni and their team did over the course of 6 seasons. I was struck by how they defined and developed characters previously introduced in the prequels, and how they made newer ones so memorable. The Clone Wars was everything I had hoped the prequels would be, but weren't. And the show felt as vibrant and as compelling as the original trilogy had been, and it still remained. As a collector, the experience of watching the Clone Wars encouraged me to explore the memorabilia from that time. And I had picked up a few modern Hasbro prototypes of certain newer characters from the show that appealed to me, like Captain Rex and Ahsoka, for whom there were no vintage Kenner equivalents. These prototypes were meant to be one-offs in my collection, reminders of that positive inaugural viewing of the animated series. But as I combed through eBay and other online sites, I kept finding more and more modern prototypes, all for very good prices. Most were offered for $50 or less. Purchasing them was a way to enjoy collecting without having to spend hundreds of dollars, which was the average cost of most carded Kenner figures. And it renewed my excitement for collecting again. The spotlight burned brightly on vintage prototypes and production items during the era of Disney's sequel trilogy, and hunting Clone Wars figures and modern prototypes was like veering off the highway for a bit and taking in the scenery along a peaceful back road. Away from the spotlight, there wasn't any hype. There was barely any competition. There were hundreds of hard copies, first shots, painted samples, and proof sheets for sale online. So much was available then, and very few people seemed to care. I remember standing in front of Ron Salvatore's Kenner prototype collection for the first time in the summer of 2017. I'd never seen anything like it, and it was completely overwhelming. It's one of my favorite collecting moments of all time because many of the pieces I had seen on the Star Wars Collector's Archive or had read about during those early years were right in front of me. They were tangible. They were real. They were a part of my childhood. They were incredible. They were, in some ways, the pinnacle of vintage collecting, together in one room. And as I stood in front of his cabinets, feeling my focus shift wildly from shelf to shelf, I had a profound revelation. I realized that I would never have the vintage prototype collection I truly wanted. The conversation I had with the collector only a few months earlier at Star Wars Celebration once again rang in my ears. and in that moment, I was reminded I had missed the time to collect vintage prototypes when they were affordable and plentiful. And Ron's collection was part of that evidence. It was again cathartic, because I was struck by the reality of the situation in a positive way. This parallel path of collecting modern Hasbro prototypes was something that was becoming more and more serious by the month. I had purchased my first hard copy weeks earlier. And that morning, after stopping at a diner for breakfast before going to Ron's house for my first Collectors Club meetup, I had purchased 8 Star Wars First Shots from a collector after being invited into the Prototype Exchange Facebook group. I had already decided to become a serious collector of modern prototypes before visiting Ron's home. But Ron's dedication to his Kenner collection and his curation of these one-of-a-kind items presented me with a roadmap. It showed me what I could achieve by pursuing a largely unexplored area of the hobby. One whose appeal matched that of vintage Star Wars memorabilia. In collecting the Hasbro prototypes, I could target the iconic characters from the original trilogy, like Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader, whose Kenner counterparts would either be locked away or completely out of my price range. And I could also bring home newer characters from series like The Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels, as well as from the prequels, sequels, and standalone films. And with so many different parts of the pre-production process available, I could create meaningful runs depicting the characters that resonated with me. The options for creating runs of a character seemed limitless. If I wanted to collect the green-skinned alien Greedo, I could potentially acquire a plastic first-shot prototype from every line Hasbro created, beginning with the 1996 Power of the Force 2 figure and work my way to the present-day releases. Or I could focus on that 1996 Power of the Force Greedo and attempt to get as many parts of the pre-production process as possible, running from the earliest concept sketches and sculpts to the final production versions sold at retail. I could widen my focus to cover an entire line, like the Power of the Jedi figures released between 2000 and 2002. Or I could aim for something more recent, like 2010's hyper-articulated and premium offering, the Vintage Collection. And my collection could tell the story of that particular line, showcasing the various releases, as well as its history. And the modern items offered a variety of scales. I could choose from 3¾-inch figures, to 6-inch ones from the Black Series, and the 12-inch versions Hasbro also produced. Mixing and matching sizes could make for a more interesting display. Or I could focus on one scale and build a run around it. And all of these possibilities, coupled with the fact that the Hasbro lines were new areas of the hobby for me, made the pursuit of modern prototypes and pre-production very exciting. I didn't wade into these waters. I took a running start and plunged in headfirst. During that time, I also expanded on my vintage collecting, beginning a new focus. It consisted of very special items within the original trilogy era, but outside of the action figure line. A friend had acquired a large collection of original art pages from various 1980s activity books, including ones from Return of the Jedi. Knowing I was a Star Wars fan, he kindly offered them to me. The pages, arranged on layout boards, belonged to the 1983 Monster Activity Book. The book stirred my imagination as a child, and I remember spending hours submerged in its creativity. I connected the dots to reveal a Rancor hand reaching for Luke. I glued the upper and lower parts of a creature's face to a paper bag to make a hand puppet. I followed my pencil through a maze of Jabba the Hutt's craggy face. And I cut out an assortment of Gamorrean guard-shaped bowling pins and knocked them over in my grandparents' living room. As a collector, I had never thought to hunt for the original art. I figured these pieces were long gone, either in the Lucasfilm archives, with the artists themselves, or tucked away in someone else's collection. I had been so focused on the action figures, and then shifted some of my attention to the Hasbro prototypes. But the area of original art was an exciting new avenue. While the photo art for a Kenner cardback would cost tens of thousands of dollars, the art and layout boards for the activity books were far less desirable. I was surprised at how reasonably priced they were. In some cases, they were cheaper than a Return of the Jedi carded figure. Most collectors overlooked the art, but there was so much to enjoy and to appreciate. With the pages were drawings from that era, of Luke, Leia, Han, and Lando. There were images of the droids and Chewbacca. And this particular book focused on the denizens of Jabba's palace, like Klaatu, Bib Fortuna, the Gamorrean guards, Reese, Yakface, and Toothface. Obtaining original era art with images of rarely depicted but iconic characters fascinated me. Once again, I traveled where the spotlight wasn't, knowing at some point newer vintage collectors would move on from the figures to other areas within the hobby, and I could see the pencil and hand-inked images gaining popularity. And I wanted to pursue more of these pages while there was still less competition and while they were still affordable. In the years since buying those first pages, I've been able to curate a run of half of the original pages to the activity book. And collecting the art has been a meaningful way of reconnecting with my childhood love for Return of the Jedi. During the final years of the 20-teens, the modern prototype community made collecting connective and rewarding. Most collectors had specific areas of focus, and each of us became known within our circles for the characters and lines we collected. And we helped out one another on a daily basis. We'd tag each other on sales posts in the Facebook groups. We'd help one another acquire prototypes at room sales events at conventions and at toy shows. And we'd happily trade with one another. There was a real sense of camaraderie between modern prototype collectors, a mutual trust and respect that emphasized the heart of collecting. And for those who had come from the cutthroat world of the vintage Kenner prototypes, it was a welcome change of pace. When the pandemic hit in 2020, the spotlight on all collectibles grew to the size of the sun. In the Star Wars realm, the vintage figures and memorabilia garnered the most attention. The demand outweighed what was available, sending collectors into a frenzy to purchase whatever surfaced. Prices for the carded and loose figures from the line skyrocketed to previously unimaginable levels. And regardless of what someone paid for something, it seemed like there were collectors waiting and ready to pay more for it. At the same time, interest in the modern Star Wars prototypes rose sharply. The Clone Wars series premiered its seventh and final season that February, and many fans watched it while quarantined. The show The Mandalorian breathed new life into the Disney content, propelling a new wave of collectors to hunt for the Kenner and Hasbro collectibles. Fans also revisited the older Star Wars stories and caught up on the newer ones released within the past decade. Those who were priced out of the vintage prototype market or who were looking for something new to explore targeted the Hasbro prototypes. And they often overpaid for them, either not understanding the current values or by getting caught up in bidding for certain figures. And with the spotlight shining on modern prototypes, the community began to change. It was like watching a peaceful, sleepy town morph into a noisy cityscape. As the values of the hard copies and first shots and proof cards increased, the collecting mindset shifted. Collectors seemed to care less about the history or significance of a prototype. The focus was more on its worth and on its resale value. Collecting soon included speculating heavily on the next hot character or line. The pieces also became status symbols within the community, as the lens to view the world turned inward during the quarantine. Collectors slowly stopped helping one another as much as they once did. And maybe certain elements were always there, but the pandemic era of collecting greatly magnified them. Collecting vintage and modern prototypes and production figures during that time became less enjoyable. But the frustration over inflated prices and limited availability became a positive catalyst, as it pushed me once again to go where the spotlight wasn't. As an Ahsoka collector, I began to look for other areas that were as interesting as the action figure line, but whose items matched the history and uniqueness of the prototypes. I did it almost out of desperation, as the prices of the figural Ahsoka collectibles reached the stratosphere during the quarantine. I felt I needed to broaden my thinking, to get creative, and to look beyond what I had known and collected. My search led me back to pursuing original art, this time in the form of the pages of the Clone Wars comic books. The Clone Wars comics were some of the earliest appearances of Ahsoka and Rex. Beginning its run in the summer of 2008, the comic was a companion piece to the film and television series that defined an era of Star Wars with prequel-era storylines and stylized designs. In my search, I discovered a trove of original pages from the 12 books and connected with an artist who had worked on the comic. He had been selling the pages for a while. To my surprise, the cost of each was cheaper than a complete loose Luke Jedi Kenner figure at the time. I purchased every Ahsoka page he had, along with some that featured Anakin, Obi-Wan, and some of the other Clone Wars characters I loved. Researching Star Wars comic art helped keep me sane during the quarantine. I usually ended my evenings poring over websites and pages devoted to comic art collecting. It was a way to take my focus away from the real-world issues and hardships of pandemic life, and to immerse myself instead in an exhilarating area of the hobby, one that was completely new to me. Beyond the Clone Wars comics, I widened my scope to include other interesting Star Wars books as well. In doing a podcast episode on the history of the Darksaber, I discovered Darth Maul, Son of Dathomir, the sole Star Wars comic miniseries still considered canon from the Dark Horse imprint. And I was able to connect with the artist to purchase some of his penciled pages featuring Maul and Mother Talzin taking on General Grievous, Count Dooku, and Emperor Palpatine, in a story that bridged together some of the core Clone Wars series moments. For a brief time, it appeared the spotlight would swing toward these newer Star Wars comics, and I noticed more buyers hunting for the art. My interest began to wane as more collectors discovered these types of pages and purchased them, attempting to resell them almost immediately, but for hundreds of dollars over what they paid. And this time, most of these pages did not sell. They brought attention to a market that simply wasn't there, at least for the prices these resellers demanded. But I'm very happy with what I own, and what I was able to pick up when the focus was elsewhere. Occasionally, I still add pages to my collection when the price is right, but it's a rarer occurrence now. And now that we're a few years removed, I look back on that time that brought me joy as a collector with fondness and a sweet sense of nostalgia for those quieter days. Original Star Wars art and modern prototypes are two areas in which certain segments were fortunately away from the spotlight for a few years. The items were plentiful, the prices were surprisingly reasonable, and there was room to explore them and to enjoy them. As I mentioned at the start of this episode, I had missed out on the early era of vintage Kenner prototypes. And if I had pursued them over the past decade, I simply would not have been comfortable paying the prices many of these items commanded. And even if I had been willing to spend, I realized that most of the pre-production pieces I wanted would never be accessible, because they were in the collections of others where they'd likely remain. They were with many of the collectors who first discovered them, and who collected them during the era in which they were available. And while I would likely never own the original cardback art for any of the Kenner figures, I now have the original pages from a Return of the Jedi activity book that means something special to me. And I'm happy to say I've reached my goal that I set for myself standing in front of Ron Salvatore's collection in the summer of 2017. I've curated the type of modern prototype collection I'd hoped for, and made lasting friendships with other modern collectors in the process. And I look forward to many more years collecting the pre-production items for the Hasbro and Star Wars lines. And one of the most effective lessons I've learned as a collector is to occasionally wander where the spotlight isn't. It's a wonderful lesson, because anyone can do it. It just takes an understanding of what interests you, and a willingness to see what's potentially out there waiting for you. It's a way to rejuvenate or reignite your passion for collecting. It forces you beyond your previously established parameters and to embrace new parts of the hobby and the Star Wars community. And honestly, it's a lot of fun. We'll continue to explore the world of Star Wars collectibles, to go where the spotlight is and where it isn't, on Star Wars, Prototypes, and Production.